your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, coming up on the bottom, exactly 90 in with 90 to come. Steve Askin joining us. Steve, back in Saratoga for the big closing weekend, and the two-year-old's going to be featured, a 14-horse Woodward, unbelievable, and of course the Travers Aftermath, and Steve was a big Catholic Boy fan from early on. Also, Steve, I want to get the reaction from you regarding John Asher, who, of course, for the 20 years that he spent at Churchill, you overlapped. But, Steve, before we do that, yesterday the circumstance surrounding horses that have come out of the kill pen, and Victoria Keith and the new NTWO, I have to ask you first and foremost what you'd like people to know.
Well, first off, I mean, I did the first story on NTWO. I mean, I did a whole column on them, and I wrote a column in general about horse rescuing and included Dina in there. And for somehow this has gotten so completely out of hand between the two factions and Maggie Moss. And you know, if you listen to if you are friends of Maggie Moss, you hear one side of the story. If you're friends with Dina, you hear another side of the story. You know, all I can tell you, you know, about Dina, and listen, I've told her, I've advised her to stay off of Twitter. You know, listen, she's receiving death threats. She's taking a lot of abuse, and you know, I told her, I said, look, it doesn't pay to go back and go tit for tat on these things. Just do what you have to do the way you feel is the best way to do it, and just try not to get involved. I mean, but all I could tell you is that, you know, she's spoken to the Louisiana Brand Commission and the state officials, and they validated that her horses are all well cared for and above health standard, and their facility is above standard. Other than that, I mean, I really have no involvement. I mean, I do a radio show with Dina, and somehow I've gotten, you know, stuck in the middle of all this ugliness and hostility, and I just don't understand it, because everybody's trying to do good, everybody's working for a common cause, and how this got out of hand like this is beyond me, and it's just something that another part of racing, and it's sad to see, because I think what Maggie Moss does is terrific. I think what NTWO is doing is terrific. And what Dina does is terrific. And you, like I said, you're hearing all these other stories, and, you know, each person can believe what they want to believe. But, you know, I just, I all I can do is attest, you know, for Dina. You know, I know her, and I know that all, you know, all she wants to do in life is rescue animals, you know, especially horses. And she can't stand seeing these horses in the kill pen. And NTWO looks at it totally different. They don't want to, you know, they figure there's a lot of shenanigans going on with the kill pens. And somehow they associate Dina with that. But, you know, listen, they have no idea how much of her own money that she spent in trying to do this. You know, one of the first things when I first met Dina, there was a story that was in all the papers in Louisiana. An owner had a pit bull puppy and threw the pit bull off a bridge into the river, and it was grabbed by an alligator, and the alligator had it in its mouth and was, you know, killing it, and the dog fought off the alligator, and it was rescued, and they conducted a nationwide search to find the dog a home, and people all over the country offered to take the dog. And they held some sort of a competition, and they did extensive background searches on all these people. And of all the hundreds of people that wanted the dog, they awarded the dog to Dina. And that dog, you know, has a great home. All I could do is, you know, vouch for her character, because I don't know the inner workings of all this horse rescue. All I know is what I've written, and I support all the parties involved. And, you know, Dean and I do a radio show together, and that's the end of it. We never, ever discuss horse rescue on there. She doesn't talk about what she does, and she doesn't talk about what other people do. It's strictly a racing show. So, you know, it's just a shame that the people are associating me with all this, because I'm not involved in any way. Like I said, I wrote the first story on NTWO, and I believe in them. And, you know, if Victoria Keith wants to go public, you know, with her condemnation of Dina and everything, make her sound like an ogre, and that's her prerogative. Nothing I could do about it. It's just a shame that that everybody just can't concentrate on rescuing horses their own way. You know, the sad part about it is that, you know, everyone has the same objective and should be united in a common cause. And basically, that's all I have to say. All I do is I write. I'm concentrating on the beauty of racing. I write about the horses, and I write about the feel good stories, and nothing I could do about any of this. I can't get, you know, stuck in the middle of it. And anybody can believe, you know, what they want to believe and who they want to believe in, and that's it. I don't know what else to say about it.
That's fair. That's fine. I thought it was a perfect opportunity to address or, you know, just react to where things are here today.
I think the culprit here is Twitter, because everybody is airing them. Like I said, you know, she gets death threats, and one faction, you know, and I'm not saying Maggie Moss attacks her, but, you know, her people attack her, and Dina's people attack Maggie Moss, and it's gotten completely out of hand. People obviously, you know, there's one thing about being, you know, passionate about something and being overzealous about something, and, you know, to the point of being going crazy over it. And you know the way society is now, you know, people just overreact to everything. And here, like I said, everybody's got the same common goal. I mean, all people want to do is rescue horses. They do it in their own way. And you got an all-out war develops here. I don't understand it. I really don't. I just don't understand why people just can't go about things and do things in the right way. I don't understand it, but that's the way it is. Hopefully everything will be rectified in the future, and everybody can come to terms with what the other does.
Well, Steve, one uniform opinion certainly emerged Monday afternoon as the just heartbreaking word of John Asher's passing spread. And I mean, it certainly there's people that we lose that there's nothing but nice things said. I called it an avalanche of love and admiration for John has been stunning, and people will get a chance in Louisville to say goodbye Tuesday and Wednesday. You knew him at least 25 years.
Yeah.
Some thoughts about John.
I knew John when he was a radio man, when he was out there doing all the interviews and winning an Eclipse Award every single year. I mean, John obviously was given a gift of his voice, which just resonates. And he became the voice, not only the voice of Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, but the presence of it, the spirit of it. And when you think of the Kentucky Derby, I mean, I look at John almost like the third spire. I mean, he's just such a recognizable part of it and couldn't do enough for people. Just the nicest guy. And, you know, we've had a lot of, good times together over the years and, talking Derby. I've been on his radio show many times, and I keep envisioning John standing outside the media center. He would hang out there all the time in the mornings. People would come to him and just talk Derby. And, with the Breeders' Cup coming up at Churchill Downs, I just can't conceive of the fact of John not being there or not being there for another Derby. And he was so young. And like I said, he would do anything for you. And we had some great times together. We had one funny incident I remember with John is that I remember before the Derby, Bandini was supposed to work, and I went to the barn early that morning. I was there like 5:20 or so, and I see Bandini walking the shed, and he just walks in the shed and he goes back in the stall, and that was it. So I saw his exercise rider later, and I said, "So I guess he just walked the shed today." He was a French kid, and he said, "No, he went out for his usual gallop." And I go, "What are you talking about?" So I saw him walk in the shed. He didn't go out for a gallop. I watched him all morning to go out. He never went out. So I went over to John, and I said, "By the way, John," because John was doing the rounds about what everybody was doing that morning. And I went over to John, and I said, "What do you have down for Bandini?" He says, "Oh, he galloped a mile and a half." I said, "You sure about that?" He said, "Well, that's what Todd said." And I said, "I would go back and talk to Todd about that." I said, because I was there in the morning, and Bandini did not go out to the track. And he went back to Todd, and Todd says, "Yeah, we just walked the shed with him or so." It was just these little capers, the things you always have to deal with trainers. Who try to keep things quiet. And, it's not like it was a big deal at all. There was nothing wrong with the horse. Whatever they had to do, they had to do. But John and I would go around in the mornings and make the rounds and just try and get as much information as possible. John was a fountain of knowledge and a sponge, because all the information, if you wanted to know what was going on behind the scenes, you would ask John. So, back when I used to cover the Derby and get there 2 weeks before the race, there was nobody there. I think the only other reporter there would be Jenny Reese. And John would go around getting a lot of the information from the barns, and we would go over there and share information. And this was before the internet. So, people weren't texting and sending videos over internet and tweeting and stuff like that. It was just basically the few of us that were there that would assimilate all this information. But there was a lot of years together, and it just came as a total shock, obviously, as it did to everybody. And like you said, you could see about from the outpouring of affection for John what a special person he was.
Well, it's just going to leave a huge void, just a irreplaceable.
It won't be the Derby. I said it won't be the Derby the same. It won't be the same without John there. And I remember years ago, it was something similar, not quite to the extent, but when Jim Bolas died unexpectedly. Jim Bolas was the, you know, he wrote God knows how many books on the Kentucky Derby. And Jim, this was pre-John, this was when John was still a radio man. And, you know, Jim Bolas was at the time the face and the voice of the Derby, writing all these books, and he's the person you always went to. He was the local historian, and he was everything Kentucky Derby. And he also, you know, died prematurely, and it sort of reminded me of that. It's hard to lose people like that.
Well, on to happier topics, Steve. And
yes.
Catholic boy, you wrote glowingly, and just a horse that kind of gave vibes early on, and the story just gets more and more interesting, and it involves the horse himself, his aptitudes, the way he's, you know, the way he's been campaigned, some of the setbacks and the reaction to them, the connections, a young horseman of really unlimited potential, and familiar connections, including in Bob LaPenta, you know, a guy that has kind of trod every path in the game at the highest level, and gets back to, you know, one of the big stages.
Yeah, I mean, he basically resurrected his career as an owner from the early days with Nick Zito. You know, he went through quite a lull there, but it's funny, after the race, I texted Bob. I told him, I said, I'm so happy I could convert. And he sent me back another text saying that he's got a two-year-old this year that he's naming Nice Jewish Boy.
Is that an equal time?
Exactly. But no, the thing is, listen, I remember seeing this horse early on, and I saw the race that he ran. I loved him when I saw him win with anticipation. And then he had that terrible, terrible trip in the Breeders' Cup, and he still only got beat a length and a quarter in that race. And I said, well, you know, this looks like a really nice horse. And then I remember he ran into Remsen, and I was kind of surprised to see him show up there. When I saw him in the paddock, I just fell in love with him. He had this chiseled, classy look about him. I said, wow, there's just something about this horse. It's just, sometimes you see a horse and you got that look of eagles or whatever you want term you want to call it. But I look at the horse and I said, this is a racehorse. He had that long, lean look of a stayer, and that the eye that you look for. Like I said, that chiseled look. There was something. He just looked like a pure racehorse. And then when he won the race, I said, "Wow! I mean, this horse is something very special." The way he won that race, and he beat some pretty good horses in that Remsen, who did it so easily, you know, to make your first start on the dirt and win that impressively. And so I kept ranking him, you know, very high. Even when he got beat at Tampa, I still liked his race a lot. I think he, you know, because he needed that race, and I was really looking forward to this, you know, this horse, getting this horse to the Derby. And then when he ran that inexplicably dull race that was set up perfectly for him in the Florida Derby, I couldn't believe it. And then, of course, we found out how badly he bled. But for him to come back and do what he did. I mean, first of all, he comes back, his race in the Pennine Ridge. If you haven't seen that race, you have to watch it. How he came back to win that race, it was like a buck passer's chicken flamingo. You know, it's not like he gets headed and comes back. I mean, he got passed by like a length and a quarter, a length and a half or so, and came back and won. You just don't see that against a really talented horse and analyze it. And then he comes back in the Belmont Derby, mile and a quarter, grade one, and he's beaten again. And he wasn't even a speed horse, and he goes to the lead in both these races. And he comes back and beats him again, and then comes back into Travers and to win a race the way he did. And that's why I wrote a column, is that he's like a throwback to the early pioneers of the crossover horse that you don't really see anymore. You see dirt horses that can run big on the grass, and you see grass horses that can run big on the dirt. But you don't see horses that are that can do equally as well. That neither one. The way I describe him is that he doesn't specialize in any one thing, but he specializes in everything, no matter what you run him on. And you gotta love a horse like that. So, you know, he's run nine times. He split it down 5-4 between grass and dirt. But if you go back to the early days, the first horse to break through like that in the early days of grass racing in this country was Round Table. I'm not comparing him at all talent-wise yet, you know, to a horse like Round Table. But Round Table became the first horse that he was equal on dirt and grass, like a baseball switch hitter. Like you think of Mickey Mantle, who can hit 520-foot home runs left-handed or right-handed, because sometimes you have left-handeds that can hit, that can switch and hit right-handed, and right-handed that can switch and hit left-handed, and sometimes you have players that are ambidextrous that are just as good with both hands, and that's what he is. He's almost like ambidextrous, where he can run on any surface. But you know, to run the race, he did just. Prove that he's just an exceptional horse. And you know, the only thing about the race is that here's a race everybody was saying is going to be, you know, like the deepest race of the year, the most competitive race of the year, the best betting race of the year, no matter what, how you want to describe it. And they come to the quarter pole and you got two horses running 1-2, five lengths ahead of the rest of the field, who are doing absolutely nothing. So in that respect, the race didn't live up to what you were hoping for, the competitiveness of it. And all the horses from the Triple Crown, you know, excluding a horse like Mendelsohn, obviously, but you look at all the horses from the Triple Crown, you know, Good Magic, who I understand has got some kind of, I think he's got some kind of mucus or something came out of it. But, you know, he didn't do anything. Gronkowski didn't do anything. Tenfold didn't do anything. Gina Rosso didn't really do much. And, you know, that's another horse I was very high on. But, you know, from a Triple Crown standpoint, it was very disappointing. I mean, the only horse that keeps plugging along is Bravazo. Well, one of these days he's going to win one of these races. But, you know, he managed to get up to third. But, you know, he's the one horse that came through the entire Triple Crown and is still going. But, you know, from, like I said, from the Triple Crown standpoint, you know, you're hoping to see more from those horses that justify beat, and then you get a horse like Catholic Boy comes and just blows them all away. So it'll be interesting to see. Well, let's put it this way: how many horses? And I don't know if he definitely can run here, but he Jonathan Thomas mentioned it. How many horses can run and win the Travers, and then run in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and in between run in the Hill Twins? I mean. What kind of a breakfast that doesn't seem to go with the other Travers, Breeders' Cup Classic, Hill Prince? You know, I mean, it just shows you can run this horse any way you want. I mean, you can run him in the Pennsylvania Derby if you want. You can run him in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, which I doubt. I don't think he's going to want to have any part of Diversify at 1.25 with Belmont. But, you know, the Hill Prince, that's not your typical prep for the Breeders' Cup Classic. But when you have a horse like this, you have so many options, you can run him any way you want.
And it's a fascinating
Jonathan Thomas, too. I mean, he's yep. a terrific guy. He's been around. Great story behind him. You know, was a jockey. A steeplechase jockey. Was thrown. Doctors told him he'd probably never walk again. And he winds up, you know, working for all these top trainers and with Dale Romans and Todd Pletcher. And you know, for him to have a horse like this is pretty special. And like I said, I'm happy for LaPenta because, you know, we go back. I used to kid him around about his philosophy when he was the sole owner of horses, when he would have Nick Zito buy yearlings for him, and then he would pinhook them all. And the ones that did not meet their reserve were the ones that he gave back to Zito. So he basically got the ones that the buyers rejected. And I always kidded around with Bob saying that, you know, he's playing Russian roulette. One of these days he's going to get burned. He's going to pinhook a horse. He's going to wind up winning the Triple Crown or the Derby or something like that. and he always got lucky. And then when he split with Nick, you really didn't hear from him for a few years. And now he's got a whole different philosophy. He came back, went into partnership with Harry Rosenbloom, now partners up with a lot of other different people. And, you know, listen, and he got part of Taprit. If Taprit wins, I've said that's a heck of a trifecta if he comes back a week later and wins the Woodward Stakes. But, you know, now he takes on partners. Of course, you got Saul Kuhlman as partners, and Catholic Boy, and takes on other partners, and you know, he's retained majority interest in the horse. And since, you know, and in the last year or so, this year or two, he's had some really, really good horses, and he's having a ball. He's loving it, and you can see how emotional he gets after the race now, because, you know, the Travers is always the race that he has, a New Yorker. That's the race he always wanted to win. So all in all, it's a great story.
Agreed. And we had really a fun conversation with Jonathan on Monday. Steve, we should also dot some of the I's and cross the T's, you know, down the chart too. The Mendelsohn performance,
terrific.
Was,
I loved it.
Really one of those things where as as they were turning for home, you're thinking, oh my God, you know.
I know.
Because how could you use him? You couldn't use him with any confidence by any means.
Not in this field. And to show you, although I was thrilled for Aidan O'Brien, and it was great to see Mendelsohn bounce back, it wasn't very great, by the way, for me running 1-3-4 in the trifecta. I mean, I said, how did he wind up in there? And the worst part about it is that they had no plans of running him. It was a last-minute decision to come and run the horse. I mean, I would have hit a tremendous trifecta because, so, you know, you look at the prices of the first, third, and fourth place finishes. They all ran great races, and he snuck in there, and he stayed with it all along. So now, and we'll probably see him next in the Breeders' Cup Classic. But you know, it was good to see the UAE Derby form hold up the way it did. I mean, listen, it was a great day of racing. All around. Like, the only difference is, like I said, I would have loved to have seen some of those Triple Crown horses perform better. Let me ask you, by the way, what was your opinion of the stewards' decision on the personal ensign?
I absolutely agreed with no call, and would have been surprised had they taken Abel Tasman down. I thought the fact that, in fact, we just discussed it with John White, the fact that a late came in at the same time, that, you know, precluded.
I think that's what caused the cost of being put up. I know Bill Motti, after last year's coaching club, was not very happy to see that happen again. But I think the thing that made it look bad is that. When Abel Tasman did come out, she almost knocked Ortiz off of her leg. She gave her a pretty good whack there, but it's just unfortunate for late that she drifted in herself. It was a tricky call. I'm not sure which way I would have gone. Watching the replay, I thought that they would take her down. But you just never know. I know a lot of people, yourself included, feels that he shouldn't have come down. Either way, it was a tough call, but she did. I think one of the reasons why I thought she was coming down is that watching, and again, this is just opinion, but watching the race live, at that point, I thought Elate was just about to stick her head in front. It looked like she had more momentum, and then all of a sudden she lost that momentum. So that's why I thought that bump. So if she had kept a straight course, I think she definitely would have been put up.
How about
But it was a hell of a race, I'll tell you. It's great to have those two fillies.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. The Alan Jerkins, some thoughts on the way the sprinters are coming along.
Well, I mean, promise, you know, last week we had Dale Romans on the show, and, you know, not only did he love Promise Fulfilled, but he loved trumpets in the race. I mean, he thought this horse was, remember, the horse worked 58 and change. You know, when they do that, this horse is, he said this horse is just finding himself now. He's just learning what it's all about. And after the race, I said, gee, I wish I should have had a Dale Roman's exacta there. I didn't realize that he was going to be 32-1 in that race. I said, oh, my God. But promise was fulfilled. I mean, you'll love to see it. How often do you see that, by the way? There's always the one race that's the biggest deceiving race in the country is the Fountain of Youth, because you always get these sprinters that can stretch out, and they win the Fountain of Youth, and they win it impressively, and they give you the impression that they're classic horses, that they're Derby horses. So you stay on the Derby trail with them, and they wind up getting beat 50 lengths in the Florida Derby and 50 lengths in the Kentucky Derby. And you say, all right, we got to go back to square one and go back to sprinting. And then they go back to sprinting, and you find out that this horse is a sprinter and loves to sprint and is getting strong. And he's got the ability to run very fast early and not come back. He can just keep going. And he's turned into obviously the top three-year-old sprinter in the country. I thought he ran a tremendous race. But you know, it was a good field. There's some good horses in there, and I guess that track must have changed. I mean, the thing that surprised me was that they went, what did they go, 121 and change in the race, I think it was?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 121 change. And then the Percy Lenson, they ran 147 flat. And then in the Travers, they ran 201 and 4, yet the Travers got the same buyer number. So the only thing I can think of is, I don't know if that track changed during the course of the day or what, because I was surprised. I thought that the Percy Lenson would get higher, a much higher buyer than the Travers, but it was like a difference of 1 point or so. So I don't know. All I know is that after the Travers, when they interviewed Jose Ortiz after that, his whole face was covered with mud. So obviously, you know, the track, they had done a lot of watering on that racetrack during the day. But you know, it's hard to tell what a track's going to be like. You know, on big days it's going to be fast, and it was obviously very fast. At least early in the day, it was.
Yeah, I'm looking at. I'm going to pull out the three. Yeah, the 3 7-furlong races, because they were all pretty close, and I haven't had a chance. I mean, with what happened with John, it kind of through the whole week of. And what was, yeah, because 121.39 for Marley's Freedom, 121.46 for Whitmore, and 121.44 for Promises right. Fulfilled. And, yeah, they're all within.
And what were their buyers? I mean, like 104, 105, somewhere in there?
And 99 for Promises Fulfilled. Whitmore, 104, and Marley's Freedom, 100.
Yeah, and then they run the mile and eighth and 147 flat, which is like almost a track record. And they got like a 105 buyer, and the Travers got 104 going 201 and 4, you know. So, I would have expected, if you're looking for like for an Arrogate performance, you know, one, well, I was expecting like a 159 and 1, a 159 and 2 or something like that, you know, the way that track was. So, when I saw the 201.4, and then I saw the 104 buyer, which, you know, as fast as all those fast sprint races, the only thing I could deduce from that is that, you know, they didn't water the track. They had the grass race before that, and they didn't water the track much, and the track changed. I mean, that's all I could think of, because I was just surprised that all the buyers were, 99 for Promises Fulfilled. I mean, I don't get it.
I'm gonna get a hold of Andy, because I am curious. He's here. Andy's here. He always comes. In fact, he'll be on Talking Horses with Andy on Saturday. So look for and seek out Andy today. Steve, we got still the Sunday and Monday cards to fill out the weekend, but. When was the last time we saw a 14-horse Woodward?
Oh, my God. I mean, it's like, I mean, that's really unbelievable. Well, you know, it's like they ran the Whitney, and we've already established now we've got Accelerate versus Diversify. I mean, that's basically your older horses right now. And you've got an upcoming star in Catalina Cruiser, who I was really hoping. Because first I spoke to Costa Frantis, and he said he was going to run in the Woodward. And then he decided that he was afraid to deal with the weather, and he didn't want to hit muddy tracks. So he runs him now. If he wants to point that horse, you know, he's got to Accelerate, obviously, for the Classic. If he wants to point Catalina Cruiser for the Dirt Mile, to me, the best kind of prep for a Dirt Mile is to cut back from a mile and eighth rather than go up from sprints. But they decided to run in the Pat O'Brien, and next thing you know, every good horse in the race scratches out of there except for Battle of Midway, and he wins off by himself. So, you know, obviously, by doing that, you can eliminate him from the Classic. He looks like he's definitely a Dirt Mile type horse. So you've got the two big, the East. They both have the same running style. They'll Diversify probably has more speed than Accelerate. But you know, you've got the East West showdown coming up. I assume that they're going to continue to keep winning. But everybody else, where else are they going to run? I mean, everybody comes out of the woodwork now for this race. You know, with so many horses, like I said, there were so many interesting type horses. I thought we're going to come in, but there's absolutely no standout in here. So we'll see what a horse like Patch can do. He's coming off a pretty good performance in the Aladar. But all the other horses, they're just basically good horses. I mean, there's just nothing nothing that fascinating in here. Discreet Lover is coming off a decent third in the Whitney, but it's like you said, it's one of those quote deep competitive good betting races. The one horse in here that is intriguing. Can you imagine, by the way, if the Catholic Boy wins the Travers Stakes, if Yoshida wins the Woodward? I mean, all of a sudden, you're going to get grass horses running on dirt everywhere. And I know Bill Mott's been dying to put Yoshida on the dirt for a long time. He was, he came very close to running him in the Whitney. He decided to go with Good Samaritan instead, and he kept Rashida on the grass, and he actually ran a fairly disappointing race in the Four Star Dave, so now he has this perfect opportunity to put him on the dirt, which, like I said, he's wanted to do for a very long time. But if he should win that race, and he's a classy horse. If he handles it, fine. You can't tell from his workouts. His workouts have been fairly ordinary, nothing spectacular. But in this field, I find that interesting. I find the fact that that Robert Lepenta is, it's part ownership of Caprit, but he's obviously not the same horse he was last year. But any of these horses can find themselves. I mean, like I said, certainly wouldn't surprise me if Patch won. Hence was highly regarded last year, and then we'll see how good Korolov can improve off the Aladar. Maybe get another stakes win for Saul Kuhlman. I mean, we don't want him to go a whole week without winning his stakes.
Well, he's somewhere. Where did I see? I saw him. I think he's got something. Is he in the baby race today, maybe? Now, Steve, this is going to be a terrific weekend. We did get one more little spate of wet weather, but I think that's the end of it. And between now and Monday.
You see how the temperature dropped? Well,
unbelievable.
The clouds came in this morning and blew everything out, and the temperature dropped like 10 degrees in like 10 minutes.
I know. That's in fact, Patty Reynolds put a little video up this morning driving around in the golf cart, and he said, "Look at these leaves. They weren't here yesterday or a couple of days ago." And that the first indication that they say that when the horses come around the turn, that last race, you can feel the fall and winter with it. There's always a point at the end of the meet.
There's always a few leaves that are starting to turn right towards the end of the meet.
Exactly.
You know, and listen, we got the 2-year-olds to look forward to. I guess we'll see how good some of these maiden winners that everybody, you know, Mucho against Nitrous. I assume that they're going to both run in the hopeful. You know, and then we'll see how good, you know, everybody's going to look forward to seeing Chasing yesterday, of course. American Pharoah's little baby sister. That'll be interesting there. So that's the one good thing, you know. You always get, I've always been a fan of the hopeful and Spinaway. Like, a hopeful doesn't have the impact on the classics it used to, but it's still a great race.
Now the fall season knocking on the door, Steve, and so is Tony Black. We're going to wrap it, and I will see you this weekend.
All right. Take care, Steve.
I appreciate it. Steve Haskin, everybody, and a little bit of everything. Wrapping up the Travers card and looking ahead to the weekend. I want to get Tony in here, and Tony had opportunity this week, of course, after Friday, the New York Bred Showcase Day, and we were all, frankly, rooting. Hard not to have gotten kind of caught in with the team around Collegeville Girl. And I can tell you, we understand what that feeling's like. You got a horse, you're anticipating whatever it might be, and you get an incident at the gate. We had a horse, the whole career was ruined, and horse by the name of Spondylix. Very similar. Got his leg caught. He kicked backwards, and he got his leg caught in the back gate, in the latches. Somehow brought it up and had it caught in there. Collegeville Girl, she reared, and her foreleg got stuck in the front gate, and luckily, it looks to be just superficial. But I know no worse feeling. And I felt so bad for Richie Vega and his guys, family, and all the friends, and Bob Brittingham and all his people that had come up from Philly for her race. Tony will give us an update, and he'll also talk to you about claiming an objection and how that even works for those that watch things unfold over the weekend. Tony Black next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.